Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers. He is calling me Dude.
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hey there, welcome to Dudes on Hockey, episode 101. I'm Mike, that's Doug.
Wow, 101.
Yeah, we're in three digits now, full on.
We've finally grown up.
We've grown up and the Sharks have grown out because a week ago we had the episode 100 extravaganza in the public place and the Sharks were down 2-0. Sharks are already out of the playoffs. Oh, good night now.
Now, we've mourned them appropriately, I think, when we did Chomp Talk on Sunday night. So I want to ask you this as we lead into this. Dude, on Sunday night, you said that you thought maybe this was worse than losing to Anaheim last year. Do you still feel that way?
You know, I've come down a little bit from my high perch. And, you know, there's been some articles written, and I have to admit some of the commenters on the blog and some of the callers to Chomp Talk on Sunday, they've cheered me up a little bit. And I was really feeling at the time that, listen, Chicago's going to be the powerhouse for the next 5 years. There's no way the Sharks are going to be able to compete, and we're really looking at the end of an era here. All of which may be true. But I don't feel so up in despair about it now. I think I'm not happy, but I don't think it's as bad as losing in the first round. And, you know, I guess it's certainly possible that they can rebound next year and go even further. I mean, look at the Penguins. I thought about the Penguins. Why wouldn't the Penguins go to the Stanley Cup Finals? They had, you know, a path gilded for them to the Stanley Cup Finals, and they managed to lose to Montreal. Why couldn't that happen to Chicago or any of the other powerhouse teams in the NHL next year? The playoffs, you just never know. It's who gets hot, who's not. And you know, it could be the Sharks next year. It really could.
Right. It's all about the matchups, and it depends on who you get at each step of the way. You know, could the Detroit series have taken more out of the Sharks than we maybe realized? Possibly. You know, I think the emotional high of winning that series could have taken them off their game a little bit.
Yeah.
But certainly not an excuse, dude. And you never know next year if Chicago's number one and, you know, they get an LA Kings team first at 8 or something like that, that they could be in big trouble.
Yeah.
And they might be gone. So you never know, dude. I'm glad that you have turned that frown into just a medium scowl.
Right. Just slightly unhappy. But it's nice to have that our Philadelphia Flyers are still in it. They have gone on. And
hockey is still alive.
Did you see what the Stanley Cup Finals line is, dude?
No.
Did you see the betting odds?
What is it?
Flyers minus 225.
Whoa.
Yeah. Or is it plus 225?
Plus 225.
Yeah. I never get that right for some reason.
Wow, it's
yeah.
Tempting to almost put more money on it. I don't think it's impossible for the Flyers to win this series.
I don't think so either. I don't think so either. I mean, they came down from the 3-0 deficit. They beat the team that no one could beat, the incorrigible Montreal Canadiens.
Right.
And they beat them up pretty bad, to be honest.
They've got that right combination of skill players, of good supporting cast, and their top four defensemen are about as good as you can ask for at this point in the game. And you never bet against Chris Pronger at this point in the season. I think it's going to be an interesting series. And if the Flyers can take it to Chicago physically, in Chicago, win one game in Chicago.
You never know.
You never know. It's going to be fun to watch. I mean, I don't know. It probably will be a Chicago sweep, right? I mean,
I don't think so.
Well,
I just talked a second ago about timing. Flyers suddenly are healthy now.
Right.
I mean, they dealt with some horrible injuries. They lost Simon Gagné and Carter for weeks with broken feet. Ian LaPerriere, as you said, took a puck to his brain. They're all back, and they're all scoring.
Well, Gagné's going to get hurt again. You know, it's about that time.
Yeah, I mean,
it's been a couple weeks.
It has been like 5 or 6 games in a row that he hasn't been hurt.
Weeks. You know he's going to go out. Call it right now. What's it going to be?
I mean, the money is basically Chicago in 6 or 7, but I'm gonna ride it. I'm riding Flyers. I'm gonna say Flyers in 6 or 7. I'll say I'm gonna look for. I love Stanley Cup Finals Game 7, so I'm gonna go Flyers in 7. Pronger doesn't lose. I think Chicago they could be a little bit surprised. I mean, they had a pretty easy, a much easier road than I think they expected with the Sharks. And Philly can steal a game in Chicago, and then you see that sea of orange in Philadelphia. They may not like it so much. Put a little sand on the floor, like the Canadians did, right? Sandgate or whatever that was called.
Hossa curse. The curse of Hossa.
Plus, there's the Hossa curse.
Yeah, you got three straight Stanley Cup Finals appearances for Marian Hossa. And maybe he'll come out on the winning end this time. Dude, mm-hmm. I'm going to ride it also because money talks.
That's right.
Flyers in four. I couldn't even get through it. You got to go Flyers in seven because game seven is just way too much fun and you got to hope for that. Right?
All right, dude. Speaking of predictions, I have an envelope in my hand. You remember those of us who have been listening forever.
Oh, you have them both in there?
They're both in here.
Okay.
We made predictions as to where the Sharks would end up before the playoffs started.
Right.
And we were going to then break the seal, as it were, once the playoffs are over. The playoffs are over now. I know I didn't look at it. You haven't looked at
it.
No. We have not admitted to each other what we predicted.
That's true.
And so now...
Should we read each other's?
The envelope, please.
Okay. Okay.
Okay, let's look at... that's... Okay, that's mine.
Okay.
And this is yours?
All right.
Who am I going to go first?
Go ahead, dude.
Okay. Dude! Doug says, Sharks lose in the conference finals, and he has a little frown face. I believe you had this one. Look at you.
Mike says, Sharks lose in the second round, capital letters, again. Boy, when we drew Detroit, you probably were feeling that one, huh?
I thought I might end up being right. But, dude, you were right. Excellent call, my friend.
Unfortunately,
yeah.
I'd much rather be opening that and toasting each other with the nice cold beer saying we were both wrong.
Yeah.
But I guess maybe in some small way, that's why I'm not too upset. But I guess because my private expectations were that they were just going to make it this far.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're caught up in the moment, you become a full-blown believer, right? The areas of weakness that we've been talking about for the whole season and really for two seasons still remain.
That's right.
The lack of a number two defenseman.
Yes.
And, you know, what didn't appear to be a problem, but apparently it still is supporting cast scoring.
Yeah.
Which didn't come into fruition in the Chicago series besides Logan Couture.
Jason Demers had the first goal of the series, Logan Couture had another goal, and then Marlowe had the rest, right? It's a ridiculous statistic. Marlowe had, what, five goals in the series or something like that?
Five of the seven goals scored.
And Pavelski and Klo and Seto just completely fell off the map after game two of the Detroit series, never to be heard from again. I can't say they played really poorly, but... You know, I mean,
no results means Sharks are out, you know,
that's right.
And that's the bottom line. So,
and the best players for Chicago were the best players without a doubt. Their top line dominated the scoring. And that's the situation. I mean, they had all the goals. They had all the opportunities. They put it in the net. Sharks had one great player put the puck in the net, and all the other great players they had didn't do squat on the scoreboard.
Right. Well, let's talk about moving forward, because it's time to move forward.
Yeah, it's time for conjecture.
It's way too early to start thinking about specific people that need to be acquired, right? But I think that we can talk about the Sharks' off-season plan and maybe in generalizations. Mm-hmm. And the first thing that is on the top of the list is starting at the top and trickling down, Doug Wilson.
Yeah.
Safe? Or on the block, dude?
Well, I wrote on the blog that I think he's safe, especially since Steve Yzerman got hired. I thought there might have been an outside chance that if Steve Yzerman was available, the Sharks might snap him up. And I know you and I both think that the Sharks may have spoken to Steve Yzerman the day before he took the Tampa Bay job. I don't think it's a coincidence that he waited until the Sharks were out before he took that job. I don't think that's just a crazy coincidence. So, you know, he may have called up Greg Jamieson and said, hey, possible you guys might have an opening, and Jamieson said no, I really don't think so, and then he took the Tampa Bay job. So Doug Wilson staying, that's for sure. And I'm not unhappy about it. I'm really not.
No.
I mean, on one hand, I can sort of understand why they may want to make a change. But frankly, you know, Doug Wilson has done a really pretty good job. I mean, how do you rate it? Let's talk about it. How do you rate a general manager, honestly? I mean, of course, you rate it by how they do on the ice. That's always one thing. But when you talk about great general managers, for instance, one thing that's really puzzling to me is they always say, David Poile, Nashville Predators, one of the best general managers in the game. And I think to myself, what? You know, I think they have a general, like the best GM, just like they have the Jack Adams Award for best coach. And people are like, oh, well, you know, David Poile. Huh?
Well, I guess what falls under this umbrella is that David Poile and Nashville, because of the state that team is in, they develop their own talent. So for the most part,
right,
that team is homegrown. And you could say, you know, for the Sharks, they've done a pretty good job of developing talent. Now, some of it's Dean Lombardi's talent.
Right.
But some of it is Doug Wilson's. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
Logan Couture is definitely Doug Wilson.
Sure. And, you know, we are not exactly sure how good he's going to turn out. But we've seen the fruits of some of Doug Wilson's drafting in the last couple of years in terms of, you know, people showing up and starting to play. And Jason Demers looks like a good player. And then there's a couple other guys floating around. I think you rate a GM in terms of product on the ice and also cap management and like bad signings versus good signings, deals, and then trade scorecard.
That's right. Yeah. So that's what? Four things: on the ice, draft, trades, and signings. So four things. And so in terms of Doug Wilson, what can we say about each of those? I mean, trades, he's probably the best in the league. I mean, can we think of anybody else that has just made as many one-sided trades as Doug Wilson has since he's been GM? I can't think of one.
No, not recently, no.
Signings, I don't know if I put him at the top of the list, but he certainly had the ability to get rid of bad contracts. We saw that, right?
And this year he made some very solid value signings with you know, Scott Nichol and with Manny Malhotra. He has, on the other side, had some bad contract extensions, you know, things that haven't really worked out.
I know everybody's still questioning the Huskins deal.
But, and then you look at the Chichu deal and the Mahalik deal and the Erhoff deal, but you know what? Were they that bad? He got rid of them.
Mm-hmm.
So people obviously saw the value in those players at that price. A lot of people are pointing to the Klo contract in that same kind of way. So
maybe a decent score, not great.
In that terms, maybe he has a tendency to overvalue his own players.
Yeah.
Maybe. Trades, so we're giving him an A in trades. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll give him a B in signings.
B minus,
you know,
yeah.
B minus in signings. And then, you know, in product on the ice, you got to give him an A, right?
I mean, how many GMs have consistently had that good of a team? Ken Holland, right. That's the list.
That's about it.
Yeah.
Lou Lamoriello.
Well, the thing about Lou is they've been much more disappointing in the playoffs than the Sharks have been, and they've had really good regular season results, and Lou is taking no heat.
Right.
Last I checked. So I think I think right now, last 5 years, you got to rate Doug Wilson ahead of Lou.
Right. Okay, and in terms of draft, he hasn't had the number one picks because he often gives them away.
Right.
But
if you're Dale Tallon and you got the number one pick, it's not tough. Okay, Patrick Kane, you got the number three pick. Okay,
so
Jonathan,
I guess
Tames.
In that way, you give him a B minus.
Yeah.
Okay, so he hasn't had that. So that, I believe, is averaging out to a B plus. You know, average, A minus, B plus. So you got to keep him. You keep him unless you had the opportunity to go with Yzerman.
Right. Or you go with somebody, you say, okay, who's going to improve in all of these areas? Are you going to find a guy that's going to trade better? Probably not. Are you going to find a guy that's going to draft better? Maybe. Are you going to find a guy that's going to sign better? Maybe. You got to find a guy that's going to put something better on the ice? It's tough. You know? The reason you fire him is because you think you can improve. And I think it's going to be pretty tough to improve on the Sharks' results the last few years.
Doug Wilson cares also, and we know that. And we've seen him, everybody's seen him talk after, he's been pretty quiet so far, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, he was not quiet. He was very vocally upset about the result. And, you know, I think we're going to see him stay in charge of this team. So now that moves to the next question. Is Todd McLellan still the coach of this team?
I think so, right? I mean, two number one seeds. I mean, how much can you fault the guy?
Right.
Made it to the conference finals? I mean, what's the problem?
Hard to see one, you know, in terms of maybe being unable to make the successful adjustments to get past the Blackhawks. Is that on McLellan? I don't know. It took him a little while to figure out how to get past Colorado, but he did.
Mm-hmm.
And the strategy worked, you know, against Detroit, and they whipped right by them. So would it have mattered who was coaching the Sharks against the Blackhawks, or was it just talent overwhelming there, dude?
I think it's talent. I mean, they're just a better team. I mean, Chicago came together. We saw them blow some games against Vancouver. We saw them blow a game or two against Nashville. They just didn't blow a game against the Sharks. They just found a way to, show up. They played well in every single game. There wasn't a game where they played poorly at all. And, you know, with superior talent, I would certainly put their top line above ours and their top 4D against ours. And certainly their goalie played better than ours.
Right. Okay. So that's why they won.
What's left?
Wow. Thank you, Einstein.
Amazing.
Brilliant.
That's why they pay me the big bucks.
So McClellan staying. Doug Wilson staying. Those are pretty easy.
Right.
Now we're getting into the unrestricted and the restricted free agents. There's a general philosophy that I think that I outlined on Chomp Talk in terms of you keep the team together with tweaks, you make major adjustments, but you keep a core or you just blow it up.
Right. So what were the three again, dude?
Because I call them the Vancouver, was the, you know, making tweaks, but keeping a majority of the core together.
Mm-hmm.
I call it the Anaheim, which is identifying a few, maybe five players that you're going to build around. The rest are all up for grabs, including your goaltending situation.
Right.
And then you've got the LA Kings, where you sort of intentionally take a punt.
Right.
And you restock the cupboard. And we've seen that's worked out pretty darn good for them. But they had to endure 4 or 5 seasons of no playoff hockey there.
And they made the playoffs, but they still lost.
Right.
So it's
but
not
their
like
future is very, very bright down
it's
there.
It's bright, but still, I mean, you can never say for sure that they're going to go really far.
That's true.
Maybe they don't have enough.
That's true. So I'm thinking the Sharks are going to do the Vancouver here.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. I think they're going to do the Vancouver, and I think that the LA is around the corner. And let me explain why.
Okay.
So Joe Thornton and Todd McClellan both have 1 year left on their deals after this year. And I think those two are kind of tied together in style, philosophy, and the way this team is built. And I don't see Doug Wilson taking a flamethrower to the team until Joe Thornton's contract is up and McClellan's contract is up. If it doesn't work out again this year, you know, and I guess what do you define not working
out?
Yeah,
that's the question.
If they make it to the second round and lose, or if a conference finals is not, you know, and Doug Wilson will have to decide for himself what's acceptable.
Conference finals is unsure. Stanley Cup is success for next year, I would say.
So if they aren't able to get over the hump, then that's when they blow it up.
Yeah, you reboot.
So my general take on what they're going to do this offseason at the moment, and of course, this is subject to change.
Yeah.
Based on my mood.
Of course.
Is that the Sharks are going to, you know, maintain the same general core. I think they're going to make some, you know, and there's a possibility, of course, for some very, very significant changes, which we're going to get into here. And the Heatley change is a version of the Vancouver because most of the guys were back, the important guys. But I still think they're going to be planning for $18 to $20 million of cap space in 2011, 2012. So they have the option to do more moves than if this didn't work out.
Yeah, I think that's right. I might, you know, I might say that they might go a little bit more than just to Vancouver. I could see them, you know, like for instance, I think Malhotra is a guy that they want to keep, but I'm a little up in the air about Nickel, for instance. And so you might see, and I know some people have said, oh, you let Setoguchi go. I could, you know, I'm not saying that I necessarily want to see that, but I think that's certainly in the cards. I think we could see something more approaching in Anaheim and not just, let's make sure we have the right third liners, then we'll roll out the same top six and the same top 4D. I mean, if they go out and look for another defenseman or trade for one, which would be more likely than signing Volchenkov, for instance.
Right.
You know, that could be a pretty major change. If Rob Blake retires, maybe they don't like Huskins anymore, you know, something like that. I mean, that could be a little bit more major than maybe we would have anticipated. But I'm with you on the broad strokes. I don't think they're going to blow it up. Not now. They're not going to trade Joe Thornton for draft picks in the summer. I would be shocked to see that happen.
So let's start with players here.
Yeah.
Should we start with Patrick Marleau?
Yeah, he's the number one, right?
All right. So Marleau, the situation, unrestricted this year, he made $6.3 million.
That's right.
Dollars. Something like that. He took a bit of a hometown discount last time when he re-signed. Now, this time he's kind of free to make the big bucks, right?
Absolutely.
It's him and Kovalchuk out there. They're the big prizes.
Mm-hmm.
they could definitely command a $7 million salary on the open market.
Yes.
Easily.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think is going to happen here? First of all, will the Sharks want to keep Marleau? And if they do, what do you think the price is going
to
be?
I think they're going to want to keep Marleau. I think they're going to anticipate that he will be certainly open to negotiations. I know there was a blog from David Pollock today, and Marleau really didn't say anything about it. He didn't say he would take a hometown discount. He said, I don't want to talk about it. He didn't talk about any of that. So we certainly don't have any stuff from Marleau about that. But the numbers I have written down on my sheet, I think $7 million, you know, the guy scored 44 goals. He's a heck of a penalty killer. He can play, you know, he's a very good defensive hockey player and can score goals and is really one of the best skaters in the NHL. I think $7 million is if you're talking about a one-year deal, $7 million is the low end. So here I have 7 years, $47 million. So that's between $6.5 million and $7 million. I think they're going to need to give him a 5-plus-year contract to get him for under $7 million. They'll probably front-load it, and that'll get him till he's about 37 or 38. I'm not a big fan of the 10 to 12-year deal, although he could certainly be, you know, there. That's what Hossa did, right? I think Hossa got signed until he's 41 or something. We could see that. We could see, you know, 10 years, $60 million, or 10 years, something like that.
Now, you just said the magic word, because that's where I'm going with my theory here.
You're going Hossa?
I think if you look at what Hossa and Marleau's numbers over the last couple of years are very comparable.
Mm.
Okay?
Okay.
And, you know, Hossa went to a team that I think he rightly so believed was going to be a winner, and mm-hmm. it's going to be a winner for a long time. And he signed, you know, a deal where he's making about $5.2 million a year on the cap hit. Something pretty low.
Yeah.
But this year he made like $9 million or something
right.
crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure what it is.
And that's what Keith is doing too. Like
right.
Keith's deal starts next year. He got a 13-year deal, but he's making $8 million next year. But the cap hits like five and change.
Right. So I'm saying this. 9 years, $48 million for Marleau, which is a $5.3 million cap hit. He can make $8 million next year, however mm-hmm. they want to figure it out.
Right.
But then by the end, he's only making a mil a year, which is what they did with the Hossa deal.
Mm-hmm.
And if he wants to stay and the Sharks want to make him a lifetime Shark, the only lifetime Shark,
mm-hmm.
he begins and ends, has a 20-year career, and it's all in San Jose. This is their chance to do it. Now, Ann Killian was on Chronicle Live, and I don't know how much stock I put into Ann Killian's hockey analysis, but this is what she said earlier today before I came over here. She said they were talking to Dan Rusinowski, and actually Greg Papa was talking to him and said, you know, made a comment about how Rusinowski basically won't give him a straight answer, a yes or no answer about anything.
Right.
And Ruza just kind of stared at him blankly, didn't think that was very funny, actually. He's like, I understand you're the play-by-play guy for the team. You can't really give me a yes or no answer on stuff. He's like, blank cricket. But Ann Killian jumped in and she said, look, I was, I'm around the team during, you know, the playoffs. And I can tell you that there are many members of the front office during the Colorado series that said some pretty terrible things about Patrick Marleau.
Wow.
And that, you know, they were really, really tired of this act, I'm not going to show up for long stretches of time business. And then he misses the game against Detroit in game one. And then he comes back and whatever they gave him in that IV,
mm-hmm.
it made him Superman.
Yeah.
So, you know, half a playoffs, good Marleau, half a playoffs, bad Marleau. Which one are you going to get? Do you really want him around for 5 or 9 more years, dude? This is the biggest decision he has to make.
That's the big question. That's the big question, right? Because, I mean, everybody's going to be asking that question. And, you know, he's been a pretty steady playoff performer overall. I mean, it's been a streaky playoff performance, but it's not been overall bad. It's not like he just takes the playoffs off. That's the big question. 7 years, what'd you say? 9 years, 40 something?
48 million.
Yeah. I mean, I think you do it. Who do they got that's going to do that?
Right. Who is out there available now via free agency or via trade where you wouldn't have to give up so much else of your future?
Yeah.
To take that roster spot. I can't think of anybody at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. I think they're probably going to roll the dice on Marleau. So then the other big free agent is Nabby. What do you think is going to happen with Nabby?
Peace out.
Yeah.
Bye-bye. Pack your bags.
Yeah.
Hope you like Philly. or somewhere else. You know,
Philly's got Michael Layton.
You know, Hockey News wrote that there'll be 20 teams that will reevaluate their goaltending situation to sign Nabokov.
I find that difficult.
And
to
Mark
believe.
Purdy talked about on Chomp Talk how Nabokov is definitely in the top 10, maybe top 5 goaltenders in the league. Now, I know we did a little experiment here.
I did a lot of legwork on this.
Okay. All right.
Here's my spreadsheet.
Oh, well, mine is more just random opinions. So
yeah,
well, should we start at the top?
I want to mix. I'm not doing strictly.
Okay.
I was a little surprised. So let me tell you my methodology here.
Okay.
So what I did is I looked at the rankings of goaltenders in terms of save percentage. I think most people agree that save percentage, while not the best stat, is the best available, easy stat available to rank goaltenders. So I looked at the last couple, 3 years, ranked goaltenders. You know who has the best overall ranking, average ranking those 3 years? Thomas Vokoun. Thomas Vokoun is my number one goaltender.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Interesting.
And then it gets a little hazy after that, but he's the number one. I think it's
so I guess when we mention a name, I'll tell you, I have him number two.
Okay.
Right. And I was surprised
that
actually.
Means your number one is probably my number two, I would imagine.
All right. So Vokoun number two. I mean, this guy has been playing on bad teams for a while. If he was on a good team, I think he'd be winning the Vezina Trophy every other year.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
He had a 925 save percentage last year with 7 shutouts, career 916. He won gold this year with the Czech Republic, beating a really good Russian team because all their players were out of the playoffs by that point.
Yeah.
So he beat Ovechkin and Datsyuk over there, won bronze in 2006, MVP of the 2005 World Championships. This guy's resume is outstanding.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like the best goaltender that no one thinks about.
On the spot, would you trade Joe Thornton for Thomas Vokoun right now?
1 year left?
1 year of each. Tough call.
That's a tough call.
You would keep Marlowe and you get Vokoun instead.
I still say no.
Whoa.
I'm going to say no because we got goalies in the system.
Okay.
If we had tons of forwards in the system, I would do it in a heartbeat.
I'm not sure what my answer is either. I'm noncommittal. Okay. I want to tell you what my methodology is. I put pictures of the players down on my coffee table, and whoever my cat stood on was how I ranked them.
Sort of like the cow plop.
Right. So let's have you go number two.
I got, I get a little, Ryan Miller's my number two, let's be honest.
That's probably my number one.
That's probably your number one.
Yes.
Okay. And then there's this sort of group of guys, you know, that I don't know if we want to really argue like who's better than whom here because it's going to be pretty close. But the next group I have...
Who's number three?
Let's see here. I'm hedging.
Dude, way to pre-plan.
I have like three different lists. I'm gonna go Craig Anderson, number three.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Not even on my list.
Craig Anderson.
Wow. Hey, come on, dude. No, really?
Craig Anderson.
Craig Anderson won... okay, two-thirds of a good playoff series.
Right, but 11th in save percentage this year, 3rd last year. Craig Anderson,
when he played half the games.
Two very good years.
Not on my list.
Okay, so then we can start going with Tim Thomas.
Not on my list.
Jonas Hiller.
Number three on my list.
Okay.
I would take Jonas Hiller number three because this guy is proven to steal wins.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the type of goalie that I want in the playoffs. Can he win a game for you? Hiller, yes.
Mm-hmm. What about Lundqvist?
Lundqvist, 5.
Okay. So you have Breezy, I take it, somewhere?
I do not.
What about Luongo?
I do have Luongo 6, but I wrote playoff choker next to his name.
Wow. So I'm wondering, what am I missing? You're number 4?
I have Martin Brodeur still as number 4.
I have him in the sort of latter half of the top 10.
You know, he had a good regular season and he was really, the entire team was not good in that series against Philly. But, you know, another Vezina Trophy nomination and another great season for Brodeur. It's hard to ignore him. Who's number 7 for you?
I have Yaroslav Halak number 7.
I have him as 10th just because, I mean, also sort of like, what have you done long term? Mm-hmm. You know, he had an amazing, I mean, maybe the best playoff run we've seen in a long time
since Jagr and whatever, 06.
But he could be Steve Mason next year and have a very average season. So well,
he had a decent year last year too. Let's not forget. So he's not only one season in. That's why I have him in the top 10. If you only got one season, like Niemi, maybe it's a good season, but he's not in the car.
I have Marc-Andre Fleury 7th because the guy's he's a proven winner. I mean, you've been to Stanley Cup Finals twice in the last 3 years.
Yeah, but his save percentage is not great the last couple
of
years.
But he's a winner.
Yeah.
Okay? And I think that's got to be taken into account. Number 8?
Cam Ward?
Not in my top 10.
Really?
Yeah. His back prevented it.
Okay.
Back and deep cuts to his groin.
Okay.
Number 8 is Kiprusoff, although I hesitated.
I don't have Kiprusoff in my top 10.
To put him on the list, but he's got really good career numbers. He's won a Vezina, but I lost a lot of respect when he pulled himself in that Olympic game. You know?
Yeah.
But I have him 8th.
Okay.
And 10th is Halak, so I let you guess who number 9 is.
Nabby? Mm-hmm. You have Nabby number 9? Yeah, Nabby is right there in the 9 and 10 slot. If I only look at the last 2 years, Nabby falls out. But if I look at the last 3 years, Nabby is either 8th or 9th. And then I'm talking Carey Price, Pecorine. I have, you know, Fleury's in there, Brodeur. It's, you know, it's middling. Doing a full ranking is just, it's just an invitation for a lame argument. But
right.
I think Nabby is right around the 10 spot. And if I look at the last 2 years, I'd take him out. If I'm talking about signing a guy for a long-time deal and Nabby may want a long-term deal, then, you know, I think he falls further because of his age, and you got to start looking. That's one of the reasons I have Halak so high, is because he's young, you know.
No Tuukka Rask in there for you.
I don't have Rask because he doesn't have enough
No
games.
Nicholas Backstrom on either of our lists, too, which, you know, he had a bad year this year, but I think that was a product of the new system. Yeah. I mean, he was seeing a lot more shots. So, speaking of Kiprusoff and Nabokov, do you think Kiprusoff is the barometer for the Nabokov deal? Because Kipper's making 5.8. If they're about the same.
Yeah. I think they're about the same.
So would you put Nabokov's value in the $5.5 million range?
Yeah, I might go a little bit over that. Because I think he's going to be perceived as a little bit better. Because Calgary hasn't done so awesome the last couple years, and the Sharks have. So I think his actual intrinsic value may be somewhere around the Kiprusoff range, but I think the market may perceive it a little bit higher. And this whole 20 teams are going to look at Nabokov, I find that very difficult to believe. I mean, we went through all the teams, I think, after the playoffs were over, and we could really only find like 3 or 4 teams that would really honestly probably want a number one goalie, Philly being one of them, maybe Ottawa, you know.
Maybe that's a good thing for next week, is to kind of look down and see at the potential suitors. I think $5.5 million is possible, but I could also see Nabokov getting Javi Bjuland here. Where?
What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, Javi Bjuland was supposed to go out and make the big money in the offseason last year, and it didn't happen. He ended up signing with Edmonton, probably the worst team, signing a 3-year deal. Now, his back, I think, played a lot into that.
Sure.
But is it possible Nabokov might overvalue himself? Turco might sign for a little bit less, and then he's going to be sitting there being the only one out there. Chris Mason is there. He signs for a little bit less. Nabokov's waiting, and he's sort of left with nothing.
Could happen. So here's the question, right? So I think we both agree that we would not sign Nabokov for that kind of money. If we're talking the $5.5 to $6 million range, 5 to 6, let's say, and widen it a little bit, that's probably around what his value is on the market. Some may say a little bit more, some may say a little bit less. I would say in that range, the Sharks absolutely should not sign Nabokov to be the goaltender next year. Do you agree with that?
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
Okay. So now here's the new question. If he does get Javi Bjuland, and his stock drops and drops and drops, is there a point at which you say, yeah, okay, I'll take him for $3 million. I'll take him for $4 million. I'll take him for whatever. Or is it just, let's move on. You know, great career here with the Sharks. Time to go with Grice. Time to go with Stalock.
Time to
go with Carlson.
Yeah.
For all we know.
Yeah, my gut reaction is this is, Doug Wilson had to make some hard decisions last year. He had to cut the cord with some guys who, you know, took the team as far as they could go. And I think Nabokov has taken this team as far as he can take them. And with his poor performance in the Olympics this year, and, you know, you can't say he played badly in the playoffs. They went to the Western Conference Finals, but it just wasn't enough.
Here's the way I put it with Nabby. He did not win a game for the Sharks in the postseason, in my opinion.
Right.
He could have lost. He lost at least two games, in my opinion. One was the blowout against Detroit. He gave up 5 goals on 9 shots, right? Probably should have lost that game number 2 versus Colorado, where he gave up 5 goals on 13 shots. And I think he was not very good against at least one of the games in against Chicago. So he probably should have lost 3 games, and he didn't steal a single one.
Right.
Now, we saw Leighton steal 2 or maybe 3 games. In the last series alone, we saw Anderson steal a game in only 1 round. You know, that's... I don't like that. I think you got to have a goaltender that's going to steal at least a game for you in the postseason, and Nabby didn't steal a single game.
That's why he's low on the list, and that's why I think it's time to officially cut the cord.
Dude, I want to move on to Pavs and Seto, but I think we're going to have to put it off to next week, because we got some...
I think so.
We got some... we got some emails here.
All right.
Okay. Here's an email from Jeremy. He says, my question for you, knowing the team could not return intact next year, unless you think hometown discounts would run deep and across all free agents, is that an easier pill to swallow since they didn't win the cup? Essentially, if the Sharks had won the cup, would you be more bitter that the team would have to part with key cogs? And knowing that the key cogs couldn't get it done, is it easier to see one or more go?
Well, this is the answer, Jeremy. I think if they had won the cup, those guys would be back.
Oh. Oh, really?
Yeah.
So, but then we couldn't have paid them all. You think they'd all take huge hometown discounts if we won the cup?
I think it's possible. I think that we could have seen there be a change in the supporting cast more dramatically, and that Nabokov and Marleau would have definitely still been here.
Wow.
I think if you win the cup, it would have been really hard to tell them, one of them, to take a hike.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
true.
If you win the cup, I think you make it work. And does that mean the Sharks would have made some sort of blunder to mortgage their future? Maybe that means they trade Joe Pavelski, or they end up giving away Ryan Clough or giving away Vlasic for nothing in order to keep the marquee guys.
Right.
That might have been the decision they would have had to make. But boy, I think they would, if they had won the Stanley Cup, I think the conversation right now would be a little bit different.
So let's assume Jeremy's premise here, though. Assuming that players would have left regardless of what the Sharks did, which would be tougher, do you think?
This is tougher? Because we will have won a cup, and that that makes all bad things feel better.
I agree. Okay, let's go to Wings Fan of Sharks Land. Is Doug rooting for the Flyers in the Stanley Cup Finals or the Blackhawks? On one hand, you have the Flyers, who you guys placed a bet on, but on the other hand, you have the Blackhawks, who have 3 Canadian Olympics. Olympians.
No, that's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, Chris, that's funny. I love that the Red Wings are being held hostage by Nicholas Lidstrom right now. That must feel real good. He's, you know, running around Sweden, you know, probably going to Switzerland and having some hot chocolate. You know, this guy, oh, Thomas Holmstrom, my buddy, we might play together. Listen, how about this? If you really want to have a mentor, how about Lidstrom in Tampa Bay, Red Wings fan? How'd you like that? Eisman's going to poach your whole team.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
But don't worry. I'm sure that Eisman would be happy to trade you Ryan Malone for Datsyuk. Enjoy those apples. I'm rooting for the Flyers because they have money on them. You know that answer.
All right. Carson says, hey, dudes, I have a question for both of you. I saw earlier today on Puck Daddy that the Rangers had acquired via trade a 19-year-old defenseman for a 6th-round draft pick, which was sent to the Islanders in compensation. Since the trade deadline happened back in March and free agency begins July 1, my question is, how is this trade allowed to happen? What rule is in place here? And I can't recall this happening before and wanted to know if there's an explanation. So actually, Carson, this is a tough little question here because it's not addressed in the CBA. The CBA does reference a document called the NHL Trade Procedures, but that document is not available to the public. So all we can do is look at speculation on the web, which I did, and look at the kind of rules that are in place for, say, sending players to the minors, which is a part of the CBA. Sending players to the minors you can do when the season is over. That is, when your playoffs are over, or you didn't make the playoffs. So it looks like that's the rule for trades as well, if I had to guess, because obviously this trade was allowed to go through. So since the Rangers and the Islanders were both out of the playoffs, they can make trades amongst each other, but they could not trade this player, say, to Chicago, because Chicago's season is not yet over. So they could not have made that deal. But because those two teams were out of it, they can go ahead and make the deal. And you see lots of deals happen even before July 1st. You see deals happen even before the draft because teams are jockeying for draft picks or cap room or whatever it is they're doing. So I think it's a little weird thing. You don't see it happen that often, maybe because teams want to wait to see, you know, the whole thing sort itself out and get a complete picture as to who's available. But this looks like a pretty minor deal between two teams that don't really, need to have a lot of other you know, stuff involved. So they just went ahead and made it now.
It's probably made the headlines because it was the first trade between the Islanders and the Rangers in like 30 years or something.
Right? Yeah, something like that. Something like that. Well, dude, we have lots more work to do this offseason, but good thing is Dudes on Hockey will be here.
That's right. We've got nothing to talk about other than these things.
So. That's right. And of course, your questions, which you can send to questions@dudesonhockey.com. And Chom Talk is over, which means that all of our verbal stylings will have to exist on this podcast. So that means more excellent content for the listeners.
Amen.
Amen to that, dude. All right. Well, I think we're running out of time, but we'll be back again next week. Same time, same place.
Later, dude.
Later.
Think the show sucks? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions@dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.